This is a special recording of Taste Matters, part of a series in conjunction with the opening of the Next World's Fair, Expo Milano 2015, where the U.S. will be participating with the USA Pavilion, themed American Food 2.0, United to Feed the Planet.
I'm Julia Tertian, host of Radio Cherry Bomb. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. And these days, periodically, we have a conversation on Wednesday mornings about taste. Unfortunately, due to a project that we will talk about, I am no longer on every week, but we're creating a special series of six episodes devoted to an upcoming event that I think everyone who is interested in food and taste and all of the matters that food brings us to will find quite fascinating. And that is Expo Milano 2015, which, for those of you who don't know that such things still exist, is the World's Fair. And indeed, the next World's Fair is happening in Milan. And of particular interest, I think, to us at the Beard Foundation and to the audience of Heritage Radio and Taste Matters is that the theme of the entire fair is food, more particularly how we will feed 9 billion people who are anticipated to inhabit Earth by 2050. The theme is articulated as feeding the planet energy for life. And the United States is participating, as you may have heard if you've heard our previous shows, by presenting an American pavilion that addresses some of the unique American perspectives on global food security, on food culture, and on what our personal responsibility may be, how our decisions about what we eat will affect how we feed those 9 billion people, ourselves included. And today, I'm very excited to have with us in the studio two people of the many, many minions of people participating in this project, but two who are synthesizing the food pieces perhaps almost more than anyone else, and that is Tom Hennis of Think Design, the exhibition designer for the USA Pavilion, and his colleague Amanda White, who is our interpretive planner. And we'll talk a little bit about what that title means and how they've come to food. So thank you for joining us here in Bushwick.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Mitchell.
So there's so many things I think we can talk about that are unique about this project, the theme of food being just one of them, but the way that America participates in these things. And I just want to start by asking you, Tom, you have participated, you have helped create the experience, the educational pieces, the fun, the interactive experiences in some wonderful, wonderful museums around New York, around the world. What interested you in this project?
Well, I think, first of all, the concept of the United States doing a pavilion about food in a place like Milan, that there's a kind of wonderful opportunity for playfulness there, because we have a fantastic food story to tell in this country, but largely the perception around the world is probably out of date. It's probably looking at the United States very differently. So it's an opportunity to show something that's really surprising and really really terrific.
And I'm glad you think. I'm glad you think so and thought so, and are working around the clock to help make this whole experience a reality. What is different about working in something like a pavilion at a World's Fair from some of the museums you've done? And I should say, you come today from the grand opening of the new Cooper Hewitt Design Museum, the Smithsonian Design Museum. But you created the 9/11 Memorial Museum, the California Academy of Sciences, all sorts of wonderful projects that many of our listeners have probably participated in. What's the challenge of a project like this? Not just the food part, but the whole experience of a fair.
Any kind of World's Fair is an experience that people come to with expectations of looking at the future, of seeing what different countries have to offer, of kind of sampling what's out and about in the world. And people come there primarily for entertainment. They come there on vacations. They come there because they're looking for what's new. And that's kind of different from museums, where it's a more in-depth exploration most of the time. So we have a very short time period to engage people. They'll only be in the pavilion probably for about an hour or less if they hang around for a while. Mm. Some of them will probably blow through in 20 minutes.
Right.
So we have to make strong impressions really quickly and give them something, forgive the pun, give them something tasty to chew on.
I'll move to you, Amanda, with pun intended. No, I was going to say pun appreciated. Sorry. How do you do that? What do you give someone in 20 minutes? How do you take the story? What is the story of American food? How do you figure it out? And how do you give them a piece that is satisfying to chew on?
I think, you know, that one of the things that we first realized was that we had, in a way, two stories to tell, because we have, you know, the sort of more serious, worthy and weighty story of the U.S. and the world and its relationship with the world and what it thinks about when it comes to food security and the challenges of food insecurity. On the other hand, we really wanted to make a lot of the cultural context around food and tradition and the kind of incredibly diverse and vibrant contemporary scene for food in the U.S. And I think that's where we can do a little bit of demystification around some of those assumptions I think that are made for the international audience around U.S. food. So early on, we decided that would be the way that we would take and divide up the two levels of exhibits, and we would apply these kind of two quite different lenses. So on the one hand, we have an incredible journey through American food, and on the other hand, developed this idea that we would seek out some of the wonderful, passionate and engaged individuals throughout the U.S. who are working right at the vanguard of areas of research and policy development, of nutritional science, and in the culinary industry right throughout the states, and talk to those people and bring their voices into the pavilion.
So people seem to be important, and sometimes I think we think of museums as things, perhaps, or collections of stuff, but obviously the world's the number of people, they expect 25 million, no one knows exactly how many, somewhere between 20 and 30 million people to visit, to move through all of the fair. And then people will encounter people, and the people are coming from all over the world. And I could break into a Barbara Streisand song right about now, but it would be inappropriate. Is it easier or harder to go through the people than the objects or the things?
People are easier in many ways. I mean, sometimes they're harder to work with.
Right. Sure. They talk back.
Yeah,
right?
But I think this is a big part of our practice and what we do in making these kinds of things is that we think a lot about the relationship that people have with each other as well. And so a lot of what we try to do is create these environments where people feel as though they're engaged in a conversation. So the way that we've worked on that for the Expo Pavilion is to have we also thought about the idea of the table as a place where people come together and talk to each other and, of course, eat. But we were thinking about the social aspect of that environment. And so part of the design is to encourage people to gather around these areas and using video and other forms of media to help them feel as though they can be engaged in a dialogue and a conversation with other people. And we know that that really encourages people to feel as though they're part of something, and also to interact with each other, and sometimes in surprising ways with people they don't know. And yeah.
Something that I think is really also important is that it's easy enough to think about the United States as a kind of monolithic entity. And so the United States Pavilion mm-hmm. could be easily construed as this abstract thing about a country. But in truth, the United States is a country of people, and a country of a diversity of perspectives, a diversity of views, a diversity of solutions. Mm-hmm. And so we think it's important that the United States project its personality that from a public policy side, the side of portraying what the United States has to offer, it really is about people and about how people are inventing, how they're thinking about things, how they come together, how they argue over things and come up with new solutions.
So most people who come through here everyone will be familiar or have an expectation of America. Most people will not presumably have any nuance about American food, or perhaps even any interest in food in general in some ways. This is a World's Fair, and that comes with a fascination regardless of the theme. What's a process of engagement? Or I'd like to talk abstractly. How do you get people who might not be interested in the things that you're presenting to want to present through the people, I presume? But even broader, the themes and the issues. How do you make an interesting museum today when you just Google the world?
You begin by giving people things that they can identify with, by putting those front and center. Museums and this kind of public exhibition are unique venues in that people come to them of their own free will. They assemble in the same space at the same time, look at the same thing. They're driven by a variety of motivations, but one of the things that I think everybody wants to do is find something to identify with. So putting the familiar out there, being playful about the way you present things, giving people reflections of themselves and opportunities to participate. All of these are very important. And on the one hand, you can look at this as a challenge to get your point across. On the other hand, you can look at it as simply a way to engage people in things that they're interested in. They may not yet notice that interest,
right?
But by putting some things out that are easy to identify with, easy to understand, you can open doors for people that let them pursue things that they might not have really thought about otherwise.
You make me think of the New Yorker, which somehow makes me read articles about things I care nothing about to get to the end because they just tell a story in an interesting way, and you want to know.
I always start with Talk of the Town, and I work my way into it, and it's sort of like, you know, doing your warm up for an exercise, and then,
right.
And then I go to the longer stuff and right. Just sample it. But I agree.
I think it's also about being a spatiotemporal experience because, you know, Googling the world is a kind of a linear experience to a certain extent. And what we try to do is create something with design, with environment, that makes you feel something as well. So you're having an experience, you're engaging with ideas and content, and hopefully in a way that does encourage you to go further with that exploration. But it's also an experience that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. You're with other people. It's social. It's interactive in as much, not so much that you're interacting with something, but with the people around you, the space around you, that you feel. And particularly for the way that pavilions tend to be designed, and because they have large numbers of people moving through at a certain pace, there is a sense of an experience that happens here. We're guiding people through space. They're kind of encountering these pieces, they're moving through, and the way that we've worked with this pavilion is to have two quite distinctive experiences. So one is more open, one is more invites you to kind of move in your own way, and the other one is quite guided and is going to feel more immersive and exciting.
But no ride, no like image of 1964 World's Fair of people sitting on a little people mover that takes you by a small world or something.
It's not a ride, but I think it picks up on certain aspects of what was really exciting and engaging about the ride at that time. It's immersive and it feels exciting, and there's an element of the unknown and the reveal as part of this experience.
To what extent do you have to take into account the sort of collective consciousness about World's Fairs of the past? It seems to me that today, I mean, and in fact, to many people listening, they may have no idea that World's Fairs even continue for lots of cultural and political reasons we could get into in another show. But the vision of the future that you almost have a nostalgia for, the video phone, which we now all have in our pocket, the computer, you know, that a room that could add three numbers at one time, and now that, you know, fits inside the more sophisticated chip in my coffee machine than was at the 29 World's Fair or whatever. Do you have to resonate with that history?
To some degree, I think it's useful to reflect on it. Useful to reflect on the things that really worked in past World Fair and the reasons that people still remember their experiences of them many, many years later, often decades later, because they were singular events. They had a kind of public presence. They had a kind of consciousness about them that was global. It's a little harder to achieve that today because the future is a bit more complicated. World relations are extremely complicated, and we have so much more saturation of media and consciousness about other places. Mm-hmm. So it's not as simple as it was, but I think hitting on some of the fundamental notes of spectacle, of having some strong, simple ideas that are attractive and interesting to people, of, yes, being realistic about the future, but also looking at it through a lens of there are things that are possible. You know, we don't have to be mindless optimists to look at wonderful possibilities in the future. We're probably a little bit more jaded about the future because it comes upon us a lot faster these days. So it's harder to hold it off in the distance and as something fondly regarded. But I think we can take the present and build on some really wonderful, exciting things that are happening in the world and project out even a little bit to give people a sense of new purpose and a sense of excitement about what's coming.
There was just one other thing I was thinking about. What's been really revealing about this for us is the value that we put on to knowledge and information now as well. So to a certain extent, whereas past world fairs might have showcased a lot of things, of objects that speak to that future, to that vision, really what's so valuable and what I find that what we're conveying through this pavilion is the significance of people's ideas, knowledge, and the application of that knowledge in the world. And I think it's less tangible, and that's part of the shift that's happening.
Interesting. And yet that idea of possibility, that sense of something beyond what is now or what we know now, remains the same whether it's a technological object or an idea that might come true. With that note and that sense of possibility, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and I'm talking today with the designers of the exhibitions in the USA Pavilion at Expo Milano. Expo Milano is the next World's Fair. It opens May 1st, 2015, and runs for 6 months through October 31st. And during that period, on the theme of food, feeding the planet, energy for life is the expo theme, there will be thousands of events and conferences and panels and performances and all sorts of things, 147 participating countries and other organizations, all talking about food. It sounds like a lived experience of Heritage Radio Network in some ways. And I'm really excited to have Tom Hennis and Amanda White from Think Design, who are in charge of the creating the exhibits and the experience that people have as they move through the pavilion, the representation, I guess, of American cuisine or American food and our unique perspective these days. And I'd like to change the topic a little bit to the actual food part, not so much what people will see, because we'll leave that for those who want to come visit. But I imagine you are probably, you know, both people who like to eat good food, but that you have never dealt this dived this deeply into food, into all of the different aspects, whether it's research and or ideology or even just food culture and street food. And I wonder what that process has been like and what surprises you might have found in your investigations in putting this piece together. Amanda.
It's been phenomenal, actually, and incredibly, it's an education as it is for any project, but this has been an incredible education in the spectrum of what's happening around food in the US. And I think the surprises have been about the connections that are happening. And I think we started early on to look at, for example, what's happening in farming, in the whole range of farming, including agriculture and aquaculture and many different types of farming, and realized early on that whole area of exploration is very holistic in the way that people are looking at it. There's an ecology in there, there's an environmental consciousness, there's a whole sense of people stepping outside the perceived boundaries of their own work and areas and understanding a lot more of what's going on around them. That was a beginning, and then as we started to investigate more areas around food, for example, around nutrition, knowledge, and research, we realized that everyone was stretching out beyond the boundaries of their own work, of their own industries, and, for example, not just looking at nutrition, but investigating the significance of taste. Not just working as a chef, but stepping outside the kitchen and into the community and working in policy advocacy roles. So it's that incredible network of connectivity that has been really wonderful to investigate.
And at the same time, we have this kind of delicious contradiction. There is the corn dog, which is frankly the center of my American food universe. To be able to look playfully at where food has been and the spectrum of food runs from the truly absurd to the quite extraordinary.
And for some of that, we have World's Fairs to thank, in fact, or at least the popularization of that.
That's right.
Earlier today, I was actually participating in a symposium on Jews in the city. In the city and Jews. It was the relation. It's a 4-year project, and today's theme was food. That's why we were there. And we were talking about this idea of the relationship between the city and the community of Jews and how that's had an influence on them, but also how they have had an influence on the city being New York. And in one of the conversations, we talked about the sense that American food is so, as American culture, is at the same time the product of so many different cultures, so much different immigration, and an openness to new ideas and innovation that some people might think there is no food culture of note, or at least there's just this idea of eating that's just a little bit different. And I wonder, in a few quick minutes, if you could think from your perspective, what it is about American food and American food culture that you do think is unique, or that is... Well, that the world, you believe, will be excited to learn in this experience.
Something that I think is sort of central is mixing, that we remix. And if you take the perspective that things are only valid in their purest form, that what comes in must go out, you can take that as a downside. But if you look at it as inventiveness and as cultural creation and creating a kind of new indigeneity that comes out of mixed American communities, for me, that's one of the most vibrant, exciting things that happens.
Hmm. Amanda, your thoughts?
Yeah, and to add to that, just a real sense of pride. So what I notice all the time is this incredible, just a strong sense of ownership around the adaptation and the mutation and the transformation of all kinds of food into something that is American, and a sense that it is claimed, proudly claimed, and available, accessible. It's there to try, and people are experimenting with it, and that has been so wonderful to work with people who express that.
And where better than in a World's Fair surrounded by all these countries to come with a sense of pride about how we eat. Something else that was said to me this morning and that I reflected on, someone asked what my fears were about this experience, knowing my involvement in it. And while talking, I realized that one of the things that worries me is that many Americans are expecting at least 1 million Americans to visit the expo during its run. Might not recognize themselves in the American Pavilion food that we're presenting. Obviously, you know, we're sitting here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, watching people enjoy a beautiful lunch at a very unique experience at Roberto's, and there are rarefied worlds. And I wonder how you feel about that, or is this aspirational, or is this a mirror?
It's both. The one of the things we were asked to do very early on was come up with a photo op, and the photo op is a thing you can stand in front of and get your picture taken. Well, we've got a giant fall in hot dog bun, so if people can't identify with that, I don't know what they can identify.
So everyone
with.
Listening has to come just to get your picture taken in a hot dog bun.
That's right. But we're touching on things that should be very familiar to Americans, and sometimes playfully familiar, sometimes touchingly familiar, but we go in new directions with them, so it may expand Americans' idea about what American food is as well.
I'm glad to hear that. Amanda, do you have a thought about?
Yeah, I think Tom's absolutely right. I think we take a lot of things that will be familiar, and I think we're going to stretch people a little bit with them as well, and even with individuals who are speaking about work that might look incredibly well known to a lot of people, I think that they themselves are going to speak surprisingly about where they're pushing their own work. And I'm trying not to reveal too much
right.
here, obviously, but I'm thinking of a specific example, and I know that will it will really expand people's vision of what they think of themselves as well.
Hmm. And lastly, I guess, after this, obviously you work on, actually maybe you should talk a little bit about some of the other projects that you're working on or have worked on, so that people can hear. I'll start with that question. What's in the pike, down the pike, for Think Design besides food at the expo?
Well, we're working on a lot of things. We're designing a natural history museum in Cleveland right now that'll open in 2020. Be fully open by then. That's a collaboration with other designers and a bevy of architects. We're working on the National Museum of Jordan, the Jordan Museum in Amman, and that's a long-term redo. A number of projects mm-hmm. across the board.
And do you think, does your work in one project inform the next? And if so, I'm wondering what might come out of this experience that we might see in future Tom Hennis Think Design pieces. I'm putting him on the spot, I realize.
You're going to be seeing hot dogs everywhere.
Everywhere. There'll be a giant hot dog you can sit in Jordan, right, and have your picture taken.
But every project, in a way, does inform other projects, not so much through a technique that you transplant from one to another, but through a deepening understanding of how people relate to the spaces around them, how they relate to ideas, how they relate to different subjects. So there's cross-pollination. This project is informed by the ones that came before it and will continue to inform projects afterwards.
Hmm. And I guess to end, I think so. We're talking right now to an audience of food people who have a particular vision, not a unique one certainly, but an ethos. This is a membership station also, and so I should plug membership, and people should join. That helps support the programs here. But I wonder, for the intense foodie audience, if you might have some advice for the people coming to this pavilion or even approaching food just because they feed their families and not because they're foodies and they're not using hand-hewn knives made in Brooklyn and making their own kombucha. From your perspective, like what ought people to take away from this experience, the expo in general, but even just like, I imagine people want to walk through a museum, an exhibit, or something, and be changed a little bit if you've done it well.
The theme of the upper floor is something we're calling abundance from diversity. The idea that we make an abundant world through a diversity of approaches, a diversity of ideas. So no matter what the expertise that you come into this place with, no matter how deeply you know an aspect of food, I think to be able to see it through others' eyes, to be able to see alternate perspectives, to be able to encounter things you hadn't thought of yet, and simply to come away enriched and with a feeling that the world is more exciting, more complex, more richer than you imagined.
Amanda, anything?
I think what's important is that people come away feeling a little bit empowered about decisions and choices that they make as well. And so part of what I believe we can achieve is to show through, particularly through The voices and the presence of so many Americans speaking in the pavilion, that we're saying this is possible. You too have a role to play. You and what you think and what you say and what you discuss and however you pursue this is really significant, not just for the US but for the world.
Well, on that note, as an audience and a group of people who've always thought that food is really significant and are excited to have the opportunity to show how exactly why and the unique American perspective, I thank you both for being with us and for participating in the USA Pavilion.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And for people listening, I hope that you will come see in situ the designs, the experiences, and the programs. If not, you can follow along. In fact, you can start following along right now on digital and social media at usapavilion2015.net. Follow us on Twitter. You can link up to Facebook and see the progress. The building is going up. The steel is in place. The floors are being laid. Is that a word? I don't know. And pretty soon the exhibitions will be installed. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.